This is The Takeaway. I'm John Huckenberry. Thanks so much for listening on this Friday. Conflict and cooperation. Conflict or cooperation. Much of what passes for news are just episodes in this urgent story of human conflict around the world or the hopeful story of human cooperation to solve global problems. There's the unresolved conflicts in the Middle East that reveal an apparent inability of nations to cooperate over what to do about refugees fleeing into Europe. Just yesterday, we reported how Croatia was responding to closed borders in Hungary by welcoming a few thousand Syrian refugees. But in 24 hours, those few thousand have become a flood of over 13,000, and Croatia now has reportedly closed its borders with Serbia, creating a stateless limbo for more people displaced by war. In this century, the failure of international institutions to prevent or resolve military conflicts has produced a refugee crisis numbering more than 60 million, to which we can add the more than 1.2 million new refugees from an insurgent war in Nigeria. The UN says most of them are fleeing the terrorist group Boko Haram. Most of them are children under the age of five, and at least 500,000 have been displaced in just the past 5 months. Is this unprecedented shift of populations beyond the capacity of international cooperation, or can nations gradually mobilize to take care of the millions now on the move? It's a question for this century. And the same question can be asked about the capacity of nations to cooperate over the urgent consequences of climate change. From the high-profile climate summits like the Kyoto Protocol that failed to bring nations together on global warming to more recent regional efforts, this century will test whether nations can get serious about an urgent matter that knows no national borders and has consequences for all.
While the reality of climate change is not in doubt, I have to be honest. As the world watches us today, I think our ability to take collective action is in doubt right now.
That's President Obama speaking at the Copenhagen Climate Summit back in 2009. There's a new round of talks scheduled for December in Paris, and gradually there's been an understanding that international cooperation from the ground up may be a better model for success on global warming than the traditional summit approach. Joining us is Rebecca Lefton, Director of Policy and Research at Climate Advisors. That's a Washington, D.C. consulting firm. Rebecca, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
So what do you think is going on? Are the relationships changing in this discussion of climate change? And is all cooperation local on climate change? You've seen China and the U.S. Getting together bilateral when they have a lot of things to disagree about, but maybe not so much on climate change. What do you think?
What we're seeing is a new level of cooperation between major emitting economies. And this is something that President Obama has been doing, especially in the second part of his administration. President Obama has really been elevating climate change into foreign policy with major emitting economies, including China and India and Brazil, because working with these countries that are some of the leading major emitters is really essential, both because they're necessary in order to address global warming, but also because in order to get them on board for global agreement. So what we're going to see in Paris with this global agreement is a bottom-up agreement where all countries are going to be coming forward with their own national pledges for greenhouse gas emissions. So last year, the U.S. and China actually came forward with a joint pledge to reduce greenhouse gas emissions. So the United States agreed that it would reduce greenhouse gas emissions 26 to 28% below 2005 levels by 2025. And at the same time, China pledged to peak emissions by 2030. So I think that that kind of cooperation between the two leading emitters demonstrates how cooperation on climate change is really going to pave the way for this new international agreement that we're going to have in Paris in 2015.
Here's Vice President Joe Biden at the U.S.-China Summit Leaders Conference in Los Angeles this month.
We share in common belief that the United States-Chinese relationship is critical to the peace and prosperity and absolutely essential to fight climate change.
Would you say, Rebecca, that if China and the United States continue to talk about these targets seriously, that it encourages cities to cooperate bilaterally in their own targets for improving the climates on their own streets?
Oh, absolutely. So Vice President Biden was speaking about the recent agreement between the U.S. and China where 30 cities and 30 Chinese and U.S. cities agreed to cooperate on climate change. And we're going to see more and more of these types of local level and regional cooperation between the U.S. and China and the U.S. and other countries on climate change. There are a lot of ways that cities can cooperate to share best practices, and cities are really invested in ensuring that they're going to be protected from the impacts of climate change, because that's where the impacts are really felt. They're felt at the local level.
You know, this model that you're talking about, where leaders like the Pope, like President Obama, like leaders in China get serious about targets, and that has an effect of encouraging local initiatives. Would you say that that's starting to have an impact on commodity prices and the prices of sustainable energy technology like solar panels?
Absolutely. We've seen the prices in solar, the prices in wind have dropped dramatically over the years, and that's because of policies. And for the first time in over a year, the United States is now rated the most attractive country for renewable energy. And that's because of the United States Clean Power Plan. So it's the policies that are giving the signals to the clean energy industry that, you know, this is the direction that we're heading in.
But I'm looking at some of the numbers here. In this year, China is going to add 18 gigawatts of solar energy capacity. More than 200 of 523 coal plants have closed in China since 2009. Coal usage is down by 21% since 2007. With those kinds of numbers, and if we extrapolate globally, is there some sort of a turning point taking place here where some of the trends are starting to decline? They may not reach what scientists want, but we're starting to see trends that are moving in a very, very different direction?
Absolutely. The trends are absolutely important, and they're moving in the right direction. China, their pledge to the Paris process, it includes a renewable energy pledge that will be more than the total electricity grid that the United States has. So we're seeing very positive trends. India has very ambitious clean energy goals. That being said, they also have an enormous population that is expanding and has a growing middle class. And there also is a large population that's in poverty. And so lifting those people out of poverty is going to be a major priority for that country as well. You know, it's a major challenge to figure out how to address those needs and deliver energy to these people. So I think that, you know, moving forward, we need to figure out a way to address sustainable development, particularly focusing on developing countries, while every country, including developed countries, are doing everything they can to reduce greenhouse gas emissions at home. And so what we really need to do is figure out a way for developed countries and developing countries to work together to reduce greenhouse gas emissions.
Well, you've outlined the test really over the next decade or so, and that is, are the demands for economic growth to pull people out of poverty going to keep in place and not threaten the needs for some of these trends on climate change to be sustained so that the environment will improve even as the economic climate improves? That's really the test. Rebecca Lefton, thanks so much.
Thank you.
Rebecca Lefton, Director of Policy and Research at Climate Advisors, a Washington, D.C. climate consultancy firm, talking about what's at stake in the upcoming Paris Summit on Climate Change.